Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Welcome back. You're with Greenwashed this morning. I'm Jaspreet here with Don Nicholson. And we just spoke before the break with Bryce McKenzie from Groundswell and speaking about where the climate madness is taking us and the banks piling on pressure, all sort of hunting in packs, to borrow a phrase that Don often uses. So I thought it's time to go from that to the climate crazies for the week, Don. And I will start you off with this.
You might start me off. You might start me up.
I might start you up, actually, with the Herald article that solar panels and horticulture to work together at Lincoln University Energy Farm. It was an ag farm, wasn't it? When did it turn into an energy farm?
Well, when you analyze it, Jaspreet, to just play the devil's advocate for a mo, all farms are about energy. That's what we do on farms. We produce energy and we put it through our animals into food. Nothing wrong with that, surely.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they're piling it with a whole lot of solar panels, and they say what we really want to explore is what the opportunities are for farmers and landowners to really maximize the value of solar farms, not maximize the value of agricultural farms. They want to maximize the value of solar farms. So is this a solar farm masquerading as an ag farm, or is it agriculture masquerading as a solar farm? They first need to get those stories straight here, as far as I'm concerned. What is maximizing the value of what? But they say there's plenty of light between the rows to plant crops, but you also want to investigate the microclimate underneath the panels. Now, Don, we spoke about productivity and increasing the size of the pie. When people keep on finding such roles for themselves, I don't know what this is going to go on to. But the article goes on to say that this solar farm will also help, and I think this is the key thing, Lincoln towards its goal of becoming carbon neutral by 2030.
Mm.
So all about the waka.
Oh, yes. And all New Zealand farms will do the same, and we'll meet our emissions profiling and targets. That'll make it easy, won't it? So easy.
Oh, so easy. So they've also got a website, because looking it up, how far, how long they've been doing it, there's this website called www.energyfarm.co.nz, where they've got the story of how this Lincoln University solar farm came into being. And they say that the concept of the circular farm was hatched after the government's announcement of the zero carbon bill and its goal of reaching 100% renewable energy by 2035. And the aim of this multi-crop energy demonstration farm was to make this concept a reality. So these gentlemen who've been working to this, I was looking at their bios. One is Professor Wim de Koning. I probably butchered his name. It's a Dutch name here. He's moved here from Netherlands. And his bio on the Lincoln website says, along with, you know, he's a very distinguished professor, and this is not underestimating his academic credentials in any way, but why do bios now have a section called the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, where Professor Wim de Koning's bio says that his work ticks off SDG 7, affordable and clean energy, SDG 12, responsible consumption, 13, climate action, 14, life below zero, and 17, partnerships for the goals. Whoever asked for professors to be ticking off which SDG they're working towards?
Oh, they've been given the incentive to do it for years. I mean, they finally, a lot of them got in early, but now these people have all realized that's where the earning stream is for them, and they'll just tick the boxes and job's done. It's pretty simple, wasn't it?
I mean, MPI is also a part of the product. A couple of banks that we're talking to, they said, are also very excited. Of course, everyone is. You have privilege being afforded by this zero carbon bill, and aided by the media every day thinking this is what we need. But they say that in the very near future in New Zealand, about 14,000 hectares more in New Zealand is going to go into solar farms in the next 5 to 6 years. Seeing where we are heading in terms of food production and a growing world, is that what we need? I don't know.
Well, it's perhaps it's going to pay the bill somehow. You know, take our export earnings out of the system, and grow the pie. I don't see that's going to work.
Aren't there those who are trying to dim the sun? How's this going to work?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know either. One thing I've had visions of, because there's not a lot of people who like digging stuff and tilling soil as it is by hand. They like machines, and I don't blame them. But it's going to be a little interesting tilling the soil under solar panels if you want to. But I was thinking about it. There will be well, robotics will get through that. That won't be an issue. I'm not sure, Jaspreet. If it was just the evolution of ideas doing stuff without, as you say, the privilege of the net zero carbon stuff, you'd probably accept that it was just stuff that we are growing through, and it will either win or lose in time. It will either stay there or it'll be someone's bright idea that fizzled. Who knows? But right now it's needing the impetus by the net zero carbon stuff to get through the hoops. So I don't know. You're
Well, they
cynical.
know.
You're very cynical. I'm sort of saying, well, heck, they're going to do all these good things. They're even going to put their surplus electricity into the local community. They're going to donate it, it says. Now, I'm not sure that means donate through their wires, their infrastructure, or maybe it's going to go through the infrastructure that's been set up by other taxpayers and,
Exactly.
yeah, I don't
Piggyback
know.
on.
Yeah.
Well,
Playing with words, I think.
it's time to move on to the next one. And this one is from the geniuses at phcc.org.nz. That's the Public Health Communication Center. Michael Baker. That's a
Oh.
name that anyone who's been following the COVID saga would be familiar with. So he heads the PHCC, the Public Health Communication Center. Oh, there's an Aotearoa behind that name. I shouldn't miss that. And this there came this briefing from the folks there that says cleanups are not enough. The government policy is incoherent on climate change. And Michael Baker is now an expert on climate change because climate change impacts public health. Supposedly, they draw a direct relation there, and we'll be talking about this in a podcast, or rather, we'll be letting a podcaster talk about this towards the end of the show today. But Michael Baker's organization, instead of actually talking about health, health, as you and I understand, is like I'm not really healthy today with coughs and colds. That used to be health. Now suddenly, climate change is health. First, COVID was a health crisis, so they have jumped onto this one. And of course, they use the fact like recent storm on the East Coast demonstrates a community's vulnerability in the face of climate change. But given what is known about a changing climate, it's important not to return to what was. We need the government of Aotearoa
Oh.
to use evidence to support communities to rebuild for increased resilience in the face of climate change. In addition, we need policies that increase, that recognize that policies that increase greenhouse gas emissions put communities at the risk of increased climate change. And so this is our COVID expert turning into climate expert. And at the appendix at the bottom, he gives examples, or the outfit gives examples of what are the direct and indirect risks. It says indirect risk, climate change affects health indirectly through changes in rainfall and extreme weather that leads to weatherborne diseases. Waterborne diseases, flooding, and agriculture runoff can contaminate water that can lead to Campylobacter, like in Havelock North. So, the whole Three Waters debacle that began from Havelock North, all of that could actually be attributed to climate change. Weather variations have also been linked to increased notifications of Salmonella, Cryptosporidus, and Giardiasis, as well as higher hospital admissions for enteric diseases in children. And can often reduce agricultural productivity, he says, climate change leading to crop failures, food shortage, and consequences on population health. Well, perhaps they should be going and speaking to the people at Lincoln University who think that reducing, getting 14,000 hectares out of food production, putting it into solar panels when climate change is going to devastate our food production may not be such a bright idea. What nonsense is this? Public health is now about climate change.
Oh, well, initially I thought, what country are we in? Because as you highlighted at one point, they put Aotearoa first, and I wasn't sure whether it was New Zealand, but then we got New Zealand. So look, they've settled it down. Government of Aotearoa, New Zealand. So that's obviously, I think, us. I can say that
Yes,
cautiously. But it is weird, isn't it? This guy has decided, and Marnie Prickett's one of the group there as well, and she's been an activist on water quality and stuff like that for a long time. So, yeah, they've got the credentials behind their names. If you read their bios, yeah, they're full of credentials. Dr. Farn is Poor Zand and Professor Simon Hales as well. Yeah, loaded with credentials, so they must be right. They
I
must
mean,
be right.
of course, who am I to doubt statements like the one in this briefing that says wildfires pose a range of direct and indirect health risks, such as presentations to ERs with cardiovascular conditions, mental distress, contamination of water supply, and loss of livelihood. Yeah. You know, demonstrably obvious facts, I guess, as obvious as the nose on my face. So, yeah, these are our experts, COVID experts. And climate experts.
Oh, and I don't know. I find it, my wife and I sit occasionally watching television, One News, and this gentleman comes on just about once a week. They wheel him out for some catastrophic event that he's predicting, and we must do X, Y, Z. Mask up is clearly number one. You've got to mask up because that's going to save you from everything. And I mean, he's got some gumption. That's what I'll say. He's got gumption. I don't know who pays him. It's probably you and me, but he keeps popping up weekly and coming out with stuff. And obviously, as you say, this is the next bit of stuff he's clipped into. Real world, I think we need to take them for a day down on the farm. What do you think? Day down on the farm for this group.
Yeah, shovel in their hands.
Yeah, and just sort of see where it really begins, all the work that actually feeds his paycheck. Just see where it all begins.
Another thing in the climate crazy this week would be the whole saga that Ian Wishart had put
Oh,
NIWA
gosh.
on notice about missing last year when we had Cyclone Gabrielle, about missing close to 80% of the biggest storms that had hit New Zealand since early mid-1800s onwards. And he's followed that up, Ian Wishart has, a couple of days ago, with this article on the centrist.co.nz that has NIWA, misled Parliament. The climate agency feels the heat after an OIE dump. So what seems to have happened on the face of it, that NIWA last year claimed, when it gave data to the Parliament and Minister Aisha Birol regarding the fact that there was some storm data missing, some of our biggest storms, it claimed no data was missing without verifying this. Documents that were finally released under the Official Information Act shows that NIWA did not seem to have paid any attention to the comprehensive report Ian had put out last year called The Climate of Fear. It didn't review the 26 historical storm events he had mentioned, including 21 flagged as missing from NIWA's database. Now, Ian, of course, at that point, had looked at ships' logbooks, captains' records, and so on, which don't lie, going back to a couple of 100 years. But even to this day, when all our insurances are going up thanks to Cyclone Gabrielle being quoted, crickets from the government.
Yes, they certainly tried to perhaps bury his commentary a year ago, but he's been tenacious and he's stuck to it. And he's got these OIAs coming back to him with this information. And clearly, we need more Ian Wishart's in this country to do this sort of stuff. I mean, I remember when he was on RCR soon after we started, and I thought this thing's going to grow like Topsy, but it's taken what now 15 months further to get to this point. And I say, good on Ian Wishart. We need people like him doing this. People like Jasprit Bovary can do that as well, but they
Yeah,
can't.
people like me who don't have a life, and yeah, detest the sort of nonsense being paraded in our faces every day. Talking of nonsense, One News decided to follow that we should piggyback on Singapore, which has recently approved 16 species of insects as safe to eat. So a couple of days ago, the One News headline was, Singapore has approved 16 species as global trends look for more sustainable food options. Should New Zealand do the same? And going by the responses I saw on the Facebook blurb, they were resoundingly told by Kiwis, nah, ain't not happening. But
Oh, no fun in the Kiwis. What's going on?
no, but then on breakfast, we had the entomologist. Neil Burrell, who told Breakfast that New Zealanders should be following Singapore's lead and get on board with eating bugs for breakfast. Now, this gentleman, Neil, I do remember because a few years ago he had set up a biodigestive plant using maggots in India to, you know, get rid of some plastic waste, which I thought was great. But maggots for breakfast doesn't quite have the same appeal.
Surely it just depends on the topping or something like that, Jasper. Just surely it just depends on the condiments you might add as well. Don't know. Look, I never forget.
From butter chicken, do we go to what? Butter hoo-hoo grubs? I don't know. Ain't going to fly, Don. Don't even try.
Ain't going to fly. I have to say, when I went to China in about 2010, 2011, I can't quite remember, the first lunch I had was frogs and then a little fish that was in a plastic bag that came, would you like this fish, sir, sort of thing. And I have to say, what was in and around that fish or in and around that frog, I have no idea what it was, but it, it was lots of gristly little things that had hard shells. So I just wasn't sure. But hey, other cultures do different things, so we shouldn't be cynical about it. But yeah, I don't think New Zealand's going to need to do this anytime soon.
No, and again, the line, this again, was for climate, because Neil referenced to the country's first locust farmer and then said, if people want to try something a bit more sustainable, reduce reliance on steak. But if you want to ultimately make the biggest impact, add more chickpeas and lentils. Well, I already have them in my household, but I don't need someone else telling me to do that. And I certainly don't do that for the environment. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, it was interesting, that article. I'd never known there was a Otago business in locusts. I didn't know. Does that still exist, do you think?
It must be like one of those carbon neutral cherries, don't
you? Oh. Could be. Could. So tasty.
Yeah. We are running out of time. What else did we want to speak about? Oh, butter.
Yeah, that was the coup, wasn't it? Getting this one was your big win of the week. You can't avoid this one.
Yeah, butter. Now, I like butter. But the real butter, you know, the one that needs bovines for it. So this article came in the New Scientist. This is... But 9th of July, and simultaneously across media, across the world, butter made from CO2 could pave the way for food without farming. There's this US startup called Savor that says it's synthetic vegan fat made without livestock or crops needed for margarine could cut carbon emissions and save rainforests. So you go into a bit more detail, and the California-based, why does everything woke start in California? The California-based startup Savor that has done this uses a thermochemical process, very appetizing. It says that this creation is earning a lot of attention from Bill Gates. In a blog post that reads like a love letter to the greasy, oily sizzle that makes cheese bagels so tasty, the billionaire co-founder of Microsoft, Gates, says why his venture capitalist firm Breakthrough Energy Ventures invested in Savor. Because he says it tastes really good, like the real thing. Now, I don't know. Right. They don't like carbon dioxide usually if it's released from cows, but using CO2 to put it in food-like substances and us having that, they don't have a problem with it. So Gates is funding this via his Breakthrough Energy Ventures firm. And the startup, Savor, has... so far raised more than $33 million from Breakthrough Energy Venture firms and a couple of other energy ventures. And Gates is advertising it wherever he can.
That seems so tasty. I think maybe the methane emissions, he can do the same and we'll all be able to get some sleep. Let's get something tasty out of methane. What could that be? Might be that there's a bit of beef or a bit of milk products or something.
Lamb.
But this is doing it through a factory, through an artificial means. That'll be much better.
And where have we heard the name Breakthrough Energy Ventures? Breakthrough Energy Ventures is a parent venture capitalist firm under which the New Zealand taxpayer with Agri Zero, that's our New Zealand industry, what do I call it, a research body, a combination of a whole lot of primary sector bodies and banks have combined forces to beat methane emissions. They have invested in another product as a methane bolus of sorts to be fed to cows, which is also funded by Gates. So we've put $10 million towards it. the saver butter is the second thing. And Don, you somewhere saw the name Breakthrough Energy Ventures recently. Where else was it?
Oh, God. Yes, Brett, you're putting it on me. It's been many places. I think it was Archaea Bio.
But did you see it in New Zealand or somewhere?
Oh, recently? I did too. And I look, yes, I flew last week. And
you after, flew? You wandered.
Yeah. I after waiting 40 minutes longer on the tarmac, waiting for a new flight plan, then getting to Wellington and waiting another 2.5 hours for guests that were traveling with us to come from Auckland because they had their flight plan altered. I wondered, who was at the cause of all that?
Yep.
And I opened the Air New Zealand Flight magazine, and on, oh, I don't know what page it says, Air New Zealand welcomed two new members of it to its Sustainability Advisory Fund, a panel. Former Green Party and co-leader and Minister for Climate Change, James Shaw, and Matteo Murillo, Head of Policy and Strategy in the Aviation Contrails team at Bill Gates Climate Foundation energy startup Breakthrough Energy. Now, I thought, that's probably why we're running late. James Shaw's having a lot of influence on Air New Zealand's scheduling because he wants to be so sustainable, and we shouldn't be wasting, we should have these planes just idling on the runway, filling in time. That seems sustainable, doesn't it?
Very sustainable. And it's funny how you, once you see a name, Breakthrough Energy Ventures, I see it in this so-called butter. I see it in AgriZero, New Zealand investing in methane bonuses for cattle in a California-based company. You now see it in the Air New Zealand In-Flight magazine. How much influence can one man have? The Gates.
Well, you only, Gates, yeah, it's true. But what about James Shaw, the influence of James Shaw? I mean, he worked for PricewaterhouseCoopers. Oh, who are they? Oh, large accountancy firm, international accountancy firm. Yeah, all donkey deep and all this stuff. But they're transforming the world, Jaspreet. We should not underrate their efforts. They are likely to be right on everything they preach.
Oh, I see. Air New Zealand's Chief Sustainability Officer, Keurig Hannifin, says James Shaw's dedication to progressing New Zealand's low-carbon future through the Zero Carbon Act has been transformational for future generations.
Oh, Zero Carbon Act again. Oh, the next bit of the privilege. I mean, you've been on this case for some time.
It is diabolical. There's no free markets left anymore, Don, the way I see it. It's everything is captured. That's with the, big interest, big firms, and government seems to be just placeholders. Keep the seat warm for the next lot coming in in 3 years' time, 5 years' time, depending on where you are.
Yeah, I think you read it right, and I'm on your side on all this stuff. It just, there's so many people that are in non-jobs, and they pretend they're so righteous. That's what's the bad thing about it is you meet these people. We've got them in our local communities even. They're salesmen extraordinaire. They've got onto something, and if you don't agree with them, you're not worth talking to. You're just negative. When they have to use my money to fill their lives up, I'm going to have an opinion, and I'm not going to let them tell me that I'm negative and last century, an old fossil. It's not us that's last century, it's them. It's those sort of people that, to me, are taking by deception, effectively, your earnings and putting it through their, filtering it through their machine. And I can't stand it. I can't stand
virtue signaling. I mean, I think we just need to wrap this up. But I'll end with one thing. India's biggest song and dancer, the big Ambani wedding, ended this last weekend gone. They've spent over 600 million American, close to 1,000 million, nearly a billion on the wedding. Began in March. The first festivities had Gates and others fly over to India. A small airfield that used to handle 5 plane movements a week suddenly started managing 500-600 a week. And that was just the engagement. And the wedding that ended this weekend, Mukesh Ambani, so the head honcho, he hired 100 planes, including 3 Falcon 2000 jets, to transport guests to the wedding from the world over. Everyone from the Kardashians to the Gates to the Beckhams to everyone who was anyone. I haven't seen pictures, but they said Hillary Clinton and others. Everyone was there. So these are the guys talking, preaching to you about climate change while, traveling the world, leaving emissions in their wake.
I think they need to go out and do a few days in the rice paddies. That's what they need. And will there be a divorce anytime soon that they can ham that up as well? I mean, gosh, I don't know, Jasper.
Oh, my God.
Crazy place, crazy place. Hey, we'd better go to after the break, or the next segment after the break. And we've got two structural engineers, John Scarry and Rod Fulford, and they're chewing the fat about earthquakes and building standards effectively. And of course, they posit quite a few different ideas. Rod definitely talks about the precautionary principle. Has it gone too far? What's it cost effectively to save a life? Because you can save all lives if you want to gold plate stuff. Yeah. But of course, we can't afford to gold plate stuff. So there's got to be a trade-off. So anyway, yeah. it's a good old chat. So hope you enjoy after the break.
Absolutely. See you then, 2057, or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio.
Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.